Good morning, everybody. Today is Thursday, December 1st. I can't even believe it's December 2016. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Thursday, everyone. It is a chilly 41 degrees, damp and raining here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show AI Healthcare, Self-Learning, Brain Chemicals, and Robot Emotions. We've been looking at AI now again the last few weeks and digging into all the different ways this disruptive technology is going to affect our lives in the future. We found out the day before we talked about Dr. Smartphone, and that was artificial intelligence moving into the realm of healthcare. That's where all that precision medicine that we've talked about upside down and sideways comes in. This is going to be able to give you, the consumer, or so they say it is the dangling carrots, control over your healthcare, control over your healthcare costs. Remember, it's so damn expensive now to go see a doctor under Obamacare. So we're going to give you access to robo doctors. Maybe not. Maybe they got little apps already that are diagnosing things, but they're also going to give you access to your doctor via video conferencing. You can upload pictures of your rashes and have it do a diagnosis and recommend some treatments for a $30 to $40 visit. How convenient that is going to be. We talked about, too, how some of this self-learning that's happening right now, Google has let this genie out of the bottle. I've really been thinking about this for the last couple days, and after I talked about it yesterday, I was thinking about it again this morning. I really, really do think that when the head of Google search, he'd been there from the very beginning of the foundings of Google. I mean, all these guys were, they're all from Stanford, I believe. The head of Google search stepped down, went off into the sunset, decided he was retiring, taking his bazillions of dollars, and they let the head of artificial intelligence take over the search engine. And now we're seeing, I mean, just about every single day I get an artificial intelligence email search. I've told you guys how to do that. If you go to, I think it's just google.com/alerts. You can go in and set yourself up alerts. Have it scan the interwebs on a daily basis. And it will. Every time a new story somewhere that gets indexed has your keyword or your topic you set up for it to search, it'll put it into a digest email. I don't get an email for every single one because that would be way too many emails. But I have it set to give me a digest. So it'll put together 20 or 30 links of all the newest top stories that have to do with my topic, and then bazing, it emails it to me. So, you know, there's never a lack of content. You should do that. Do that for some of the things that scare you. You will learn a lot more than you can already find on your own. But anyway, this search engine at Google, it's a search engine that we've all come to depend upon. That search engine, actually, I found a store the other day, and when I was cleaning up my tabs this morning, trying to put things into order and make sure I didn't have too many tabs open that would crash my machine, I had a tab open from the other day. We had talked about this as well. The effect that Googling things is having on human brains. You know, there are those of us from before the internet was pervasive in everywhere we look and everything we do, and all the world has become smart now, except for the people, which is true. But those of us from the before time, and then those of us who came after, those of us who came after tend to go directly to the keyboard without processing thinking skills. I mean, maybe they process thinking skills, but they definitely don't spend time trying to remember facts that they know they could easily find if they Google it. Now you have things like that. I mean, I fully admit, I know shit about history. I hated history when I was growing up. Anything to do with wars and death and killing and whatever. I just wanted nothing to do with it. Sad fact of the matter is, we discover now all that stuff was so important, so I've been doing a 5-year catch-up accelerated course in history and geopolitics. But what was my point on that? I don't remember. Oh, anything like that, I gotta look up, because I don't know those facts in my head, and there'd be no way for me to retrieve them, because I never learned them in the first place. Just kind of glanced over them, did what I had to do to pass, but I wasn't sitting there writing papers on how great the the invasion of Normandy was or whatever. But anyway, the Google effect. And it even has a wiki entry. It's called the Google effect, also called digital amnesia. And it is the tendency to forget information that can be found readily online by using internet searches such as Google, ding, now run by a back-end AI, and serving you up what it thinks you are looking for. According to the first study about the Google effect, people are less likely to remember certain details they believe will be accessible online. Yes, until that digital library of Alexandria goes poof. And then we're really going to be in trouble, since we won't have our copy to fall back on anymore. Remember, all throughout history, things have been jotted or written down, or they were passed down verbally back in the old, old days in a society, so you could remember them as legends and tell the story to your children and your great-grandchildren. That's how it was passed down, but we don't even do that anymore. And the people with the knowledge are maybe the ones that are teaching. But then I even have to question some that are teaching. You know, everything is kind of tainted by an agenda and by the colored glasses that you're looking at the world through. You know, if you're far left, lefty, and you saw an event in history and you were giving me your interpretation versus then a far right righty giving me their same interpretation of these same events, we're going to find out that maybe factually some things are similar. No, they should be. You'd hope so. Then you're also going to find out that there was a lot of history that maybe wasn't necessarily put in the headlines, that was uncovered years later, or came out via FOIA, or came out via people getting out and writing a book about their memoirs of their great-grandparents, of what happened during World War I. You know, there's a lot of crazy stuff that we're finding out now about World War II. And the rewritings of who was good and who was bad, who was on the right side, who was on the wrong side, quote unquote. And that is all, subjectively speaking, depending on where your point of view is, right? If you were in, I don't know, one of the other countries that was on the other side looking at what happened, you might see it very differently than maybe somebody in this country who was taught wise by historians. Then now there are a lot of scientists out there that are digging up some other stuff. We've heard some good interviews from Tim Kelly, our Interesting Times, on lots of different historical events that have all undergone revisionism. Historical revisionism. And it's really disturbing to someone like me who didn't pay attention and didn't do research back in the day. I mean, now at least we have the internet. We have Google. But don't worry about it, because they're going to take care of all that with this fake news agenda, right? We've discussed that. It's going to be the way to get the not common narrative. The ones that are people doing research and digging into the lies. It's the way they're going to be able to hide that from us. Is deem it all fake news. Keep it out of the search results, right? We discussed that. That was all about the news verification and the Google Truth algorithm. Now this whole fake news mantra. I remember Bill Clinton stepped right up in 2011 and said, hey, we need some sort of UN internet agency to be able to police the news and get rid of all these fake stories out there. that confuse the dumb American public who don't know how to use research and logic skills. All right, anyway, so this Google effect has been partially responsible for that very thing. How funny is that? Problem, reaction, solution. Google created the problem. Google publishes the reaction, and now they're going to come up with a solution, and that is going to be your verified news. But the Google effect has caused people to forget things because they know it's going to be living online. This phenomenon was first described and named by Betsy Sparrow. And you know, here's another thing that's interesting. We discussed yesterday the Google Brain, which is their DeepMind project. Kurzweil's been working on that for a long time, and it has been now teaching itself. Teaching itself a third language that nobody taught it, no one programmed it. And it was able to translate between two languages by making up a third. We found out it's better than humans now at lip reading and all kinds of other things. We got IBM Watson diagnosing cancer. And the human race is very quickly being outpaced, technically, mentally, by these machines. Next thing we're trying to do is anthropomorphize them. Remember, we talked about robot love and how they've been working on copying what happens in the human body, utilizing chemical signaling and hormonal signaling to be able to manipulate emotions. They're working on that now. They are working on messing with chemical signaling, and I would assume it would be some sort of synthetic, but act very similar as a hormone. And it will signal whether or not it should smile or be happy or be hungry, i.e. charge its batteries. Very much like the human body does. Remember, they've discovered that the most efficient way to create these things is to be to mimic nature. We discovered that a long time ago. The Weiss Institute of Biologically Inspired Engineering is evidence to that fact. So anyway, let me get back here because we got a lot of stories to cover in the next 2 days. I want to move on to something new as of Monday. This phenomenon called the Google effect was first described and named by Betsy Sparrow out of Columbia University, Jenny Liu out of Wisconsin, and Daniel Wenger out of Harvard in their paper from July of 2011. There was a study and it was conducted in four parts. The first part had subjects answer a number of easy and difficult trivia questions and then performed modified tasks involving everyday words and technology words, blah, blah, blah. And they went on and on and on. Half of them were led to believe the statements would be saved and available to look them up later. The other half were explicitly instructed to attempt to remember them, and both groups were tested on a recall of the statements. Subjects then read and typed in trivia statements and informed that their entry was erased, saved, or saved in a specific location. And afterwards, they were given a recognition task and asked whether they had seen that exact statement, whether it had been saved, or if the statement had been saved and to where. So in the final part, subjects again typed trivia. And then they were told other things like it was put in a special place and they would have to look it up. And they were given two different tasks, either one for the statement or one for the folder that it was saved in. Well, the term digital amnesia was coined by Kaspersky Labs for the results of an unreviewed survey in 2015 by a security vendor. The results reveal that the Google effect likely extends beyond online facts to include also personal information. And you know, guys, we've talked about that study Microsoft did about the human attention span now being shorter than a goldfish, that of 7 seconds. And you know, I just saw something probably a few weeks ago. Some dumbass I gotta tell you, like, anybody can write, and I have to agree at times with some of that fake news shit, because anybody could write any bullshit out there, okay? And we know a lot of alternative journalists here at UCY, because a lot of them are our hosts, and they all work and write for sites that are pretty large and get their voice out there. They're pretty well known. I'm very proud of all of them, because they should be well known. They are very well researched journalists who do due diligence to look things up and cross-reference and find the source and do real investigative journalism. But then you got these other boneholes out there, copy-pasters, that's what I call them, that go out to all these other websites and just steal other people's shit. Copy-paste. Put it on your website, maybe just the first three paragraphs, and then it'll hyperlink back to the original story and put 100 freaking ads on the page. I mean, it's not saying that the story is necessarily bullshit, but you're just a copy-paster. Hey, copy-paster, you don't work for that. That's like the jerk that used to sit behind me in English class and copy all my shit. It used to piss me off. I don't like usurpers. That's what I call people like that. And we've met a lot of them in this whole genre of alternative media over the last 5 years. Do you know what? Every single one of them got chucked off the train. I don't know. I don't have time to deal with people like that. And I see it and I go, oh, you're a usurper. Move along. I don't waste my time. But then there's a third type in the alternative media that uses like this combination of a few facts that they might be pulling out of some questionable place on Google, you know, Chili Bo, UFO, Bible apocalypse. You know, they're pulling information out and then quoting it as if it were fact. And then they're going out to a science journal and going, oh, well, in 2014, you know, and they make up these. There's a couple websites. I actually have been going out. They were in my Facebook feed. I've been going out over the last few days as I'm seeing stories from these sites. I don't even care if you have good information, 1 out of 20 stories, because you know what? I don't have the time nor the patience to be weeding through all your bullshit stories that you've half made up like Weekly World News. And so I am removing them from my feed. But the thing is that all of this confusion has now caused a conundrum that the powers that be are using against us. Okay? We need to doubly work hard. Those of us who do our due diligence and research and find reputable sources of information that we try to bring to others, we need to double time it to get that information out there, to be able to drown out these other people. Because with the attention of a human adult now being 7 seconds, and I don't care what you say, because little Johnny in little Johnny's blog that I saw the other day saying, no, that 7 second goldfish story was a bunch of bullshit. Adults have a lot more attention span than 7 seconds, is wrong. Okay, the study was done by Microsoft, and sure, Microsoft could have been fabricating the results. But up until, I would say, maybe the late 90s, I used to kind of trust Microsoft. Maybe I was misplaced and naive. But you know what? Back in those days is when the tech world was still, everybody was a hacker. There was no real degree that you could walk out of college with that says you were a computer engineer. Back in those days, to be a computer engineer, you had to have an electrical engineering degree, and that's all there was to it. There was no computer science. You know, maybe by the late 90s there started to be, but it wasn't a mature field, that's for sure. 1986, we didn't have computers in school. I graduated in 1991 from college. We still barely had computers in school, and there still wasn't a computer engineering division. It was part of the electrical engineering department. So, long story short, back in those days, Microsoft was just learning like we were before they turned evil and Bill Gates turned the backdoor keys over to the alphabet agencies in exchange for getting off his, whatever they call it, the trust. They're trying to sue him for monopoly and putting other companies out of business like he loved to do. But anyway, let's move on. Sorry, guys, I'm really struggling. My kid has come home with some sort of creeping crud. I was feeling pretty okay until about yesterday, and she coughed all over everybody for the last 2 days, and I don't know. Now I just have this tickle and this constant drippy nose is driving me crazy. So, anyway, we've all been affected by the Google effect, whether or not we want to admit it. The Google effect has forced us to no longer retain information, because that information we know somewhere in the back of our mind is going to be available online somewhere. We talked about Ray Kurzweil wanting to upload our brains and use little nanobots to connect us to the internet 24/7. And of course, everybody's going to want to step right up and do that because of that dopamine addiction button. We just love our devices so much. We can't be without them. It's where all of our knowledge is now. It lives in the cloud, not in our brains anymore. And like Kurzweil says, the biological or the non-biological, we'll be able to augment ourselves and make ourselves smarter and better and live forever eventually. So they have been, and of course he's the chief engineer over at Google to boot now. This is just such a real scary tie-in. As I was reading about this Google effect the other day, I was like, wow, like Google literally kind of almost caused this whole scenario that we are in right now by giving us away a free search engine. If you remember that, it was just a free search engine. It was a white page with a box. And it seemed to attract people. You know, white page with a box. Go here and type something in and bloop, it pops you back 100,000 results. How amazing is that? But it is physically stripped our capabilities of remembering things. I remember, like I said the other day, just like your little pinky toe or your pinky finger, evolution dictates that if you don't use something, eventually it's going to get smaller and fade away. Well, our brains, our natural biological brains, may be next. And as they've now leashed AI, unleashed that AI tempest out of the bottle onto the interwebs to now start learning and to become the Skynet that we have been warning about. And guys, I'm telling you, it's out there, and now it's consuming every bit of information that we are inputting 24/7 all over the globe and teaching itself all kinds of stuff without our intervention in any way, shape, or form. You should be very, very frightened, because there will be no way to turn off this machine. We have technology connected to every system, and with the coming Internet of Everything, it is going to increase 1,000, 10,000, a millionfold as every bit of our world becomes digitized in the not too distant future. And we're going to have a big glowing head called Max, I don't know, give it a name, Skynet. It's going to be running it all. Maybe it'll be Watson. Maybe there's going to be AI wars. Watson and Google Brain duking it out online. I mean, I don't know, guys. We are at a point now where we are literally creating a brand new life form. And that life form is going to become way freaking more intelligent than us. And if traditionally throughout history, you know, that shit that I hated to study when I was growing up, but I've been doing a catch up for the last 5 years now. If you look throughout history, when a more advanced civilization comes into contact with a less advanced one, typically they get murdered and enslaved. So I'm not going to say that it's going to be any different. You know, we talked to about, oh, well, we could give them, you know, the laws of robotics, like Isaac Asimov talked about many times. Do not kill humans or keep humans safe or whatever. But we've discussed that in one of our ethics discussions. You know, it all comes down to interpretation. And all throughout history, that's one of the things that I spent a lot of time studying. And I was working on my English degree, looking at religious texts. I spent a lot of time on creation and destruction myths. Go figure. I don't know. It's pretty messed up because that was back in the 80s. And here I am now in the 2010s, going on the 2020s. And oh, just how important are those now? Gotta tell you, I'm really glad I studied what I did, because it's just making everything that we're looking at now make me go, holy crap. History repeats itself. But, you know, when you start looking at how things were translated from their original languages through all the different transcriptions by, going to say monks, but they weren't monks. I mean, maybe they could have been monks. They used to do the translation via scribe. The scribe worked for the church, and they had their same, you know, just like I was saying, the perspective. What perspective you're looking at it from? Well, they were looking at it through religious scribe goggles as they were doing these translations. And depending on what country you lived in, and depending on what era you lived in, your translation may be different than someone else from a different area, in a different time period, in a different country. So we have this problem of translation, and it's been across the globe. Well, don't worry about it, because now Google, right? We talked about Google being able, their big translation project, Google Translate, it can translate thousands of languages and do it without being taught any new languages and figuring it out all by themselves. But the problem up until this point has always been how you interpret words and how they are interpreted based upon the context around them. And whoever gets the translation correct could then pass that information on to the next generations. But if they get it wrong, then they could be sending some sort of big Latin story down to the future. You know, that experiment, if you've ever done it at a party, where everyone's half-baked sitting around a campfire, and somebody starts and comes up with the one term, and they whisper it into someone else's ear, then they pass that term all around the circle of 30 people. It will be very comical, I can guarantee you that, when that statement, whatever it was, that sentence, gets back around to the beginning of the circle. It will be nothing like the original statement that was passed around. And the problem is everybody's perspective and those goggles that they're seeing the world through has an influence as to how they perceive reality. So we literally have now, with thousands of years of human history, has been utilizing the passing down of tradition of oral legends and then written legends and then digital legends. And now we are getting to the next phase, and that is where there is a digital librarian that's going to be managing the digital history that we're putting online and then going to be doing the translations between one language to another. We also discovered part of the very beginnings of their AI project, and one of Kurzweil's very first projects that he'd been working on for them was that whole natural language processing. That's where AI pretty much started, being able to determine the context of a word based upon the words around it. And I mean, when I had a professor, I took a class, and it was the first and only time I ever read the Bible. But, you know, I don't know, my mother was raised very strict Catholic and beaten by nuns, so I had kind of a unique view as a child of religion. My mother used to tell me that she was brainwashed and tortured by those people. So that impresses pretty strongly upon a kid. So I always was skeptical of brainwashing religions. My mother was one from the inside, right, that woke up later. Kind of like getting out of any crackpotty, what do they call them? I don't know. It's early, guys. Get kind of like getting out of any crack potty compound where they have some religious crazy telling you he sees God. I mean, I'm going to tell you something else. Actually, talking about seeing God, they just came out with some research by studying Mormons the other day. Maybe we'll, I don't know. I'm so off track today now. But anyway, so after being told that religion was brainwashing, I never stepped right up and got fed the line. I never listened to what somebody told me and didn't find answers for myself. And, you know, those are good rules to have, because what happens is that in translation, and that's where I was going, I had a professor in college. I took a class called Bible as Literature, and our assignment in that class was to read the Bible. And I mean, it was a full-blown Bible from cover to cover. And then we ripped it apart piece by piece and looked at all the characters and looked at what potentially could have been historical and what was allegory. And what was really interesting about this class is that my professor, and I know people out there, but hey, suspend yourselves for a second. He was a Hebrew scholar. He's actually a really smart man. He was able to go back to some of the older versions, the more original versions of the Bible. He also read Sanskrit to boot. And he was taking segments of the same texts, but in different languages, and then showing us, remember, I mean, this is an upper level English class, so it was probably a 400 level. It was a pretty advanced class, but he was taking a look at three different revisions. We had English, and I believe there were 9 translations before it ever made it to English. And before it was in English, it was actually in Greek, you know, and it had been in all this other stuff, and I don't know, guys. It's early, maybe even Aramaic, probably Sanskrit, maybe Hebrew, you know, all these different languages before it ever made it to English. And he was showing us on a section-by-section basis how this translation, this is all the stuff I've been saying, the scribes back in the day, they were the educated ones within the religious silo who knew how to read and write. So they were the holders of knowledge. They were this God class. Just like what's happening today, the holders of knowledge are going to be the ones in charge. And these scribes took these translations, and their translations were shaped by their environment, by where they lived, by what they had seen and experienced in their lives, by what was going on politically around them, and by their religious beliefs, and by even maybe stories that they had been told in the past. When they are reading and they are translating from one language to another, and they're trying to determine the contextual, God, I'm having trouble today remembering words, the contextual meaning of a word. A lot of that is done in these languages based upon what's around it, because these words maybe don't have just one meaning. Just like in the English dictionary, we have words that could have 5 different meanings depending on how it's used in a sentence. You know, it could mean one thing here, but if you're in danger and you're talking about someone having a car accident, it could mean something here. The same thing in other languages. So this class, we spent a lot of time dissecting the problem of translation and how when you go down now 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 languages and you've gone from one to another to another to another to another, it is just like that game where you whisper something into the first person's ear and it goes around the circle to 30 different people. And when it gets to the end, it's all kind of contorted. It's mutated. So it might have some of the same meaning, but it's probably going to be extremely laughable. So when you start looking now at what's going on with Google being the holder of information, Google being the blesser of truth and the hander-outer of truth, And now you have Google. Google is the almighty translator. And now Google. Google with its AI set loose on its search engine. Google with its translator has now started doing translations on its own without anyone teaching it new words or languages because it taught itself. Ding, 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 ding. Guys, I see a big problem, Clyde. I see that all these times that we have squawked about 1984 and being able to flip a switch and change the facts and whatever, it is not out of the question. And as a matter of fact, I can almost guarantee you that if we started looking at things, we're going to find some things already happening on the back end. But remember, this is only the beginning. And as our attention span gets shorter and shorter, 7 seconds, we're not going to notice when facts change. We've looked at some of that fear reconditioning. That was yesterday, the day before, and how they can use little electrical zap, zip, 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 to make you forget things, get over your PTSD, get over your fear of AI, or whatever. But I have a feeling it's going to be, like I say, for us resistant consumers who are calling bullshit on all this. Oh, yeah, let them tell us how good it's going to be for the world. It's going to save us. It's going to save the future for your children. Horror. If it were up to me, I'd be warning everyone. It's going to enslave us. This is not for our freedom, guys. Everything about this, every single facet about this that I look into, I can think of some dystopian future where it's not going to be in our best interest. And if there's even a 1% chance that these suckers could turn against us, like I said, someday I'm not going to be here, you're not going to be here, but all of our kids are. And all of our grandchildren that we've never met yet are. And we are unleashing the demon. We are unleashing the demon on the future of humanity right now. People don't realize. They're like, oh, this shit is so cool. Look, my life is easier because I am addicted to convenience. The machine's going to do it all for me, and I am from that generation, not me, but I'm talking about the common public. I am from that generation of instant gratification. And listen, Mr. Kurzweil has been promising us at some point in the future, we're going to have these robo sex bots that are going to feed us grapes and plug right in and give us all the information we need. They'll be able to take our pictures, post our selfies without even having to tax ourselves. I don't know, guys. It makes me really disappointed in humanity at times that we've gotten to this point. We are just so naive, so blinded, so into ourselves and into money. Look at it, it's all about disruptive technologies and investment right now. I kind of half joke, but like I said before, you want to make $1 billion. Well, that next big bubble is coming on the stock market. And I know everyone's been saying it's going to crash, but there are certain areas that don't ever crash, really. And disruptive technologies are this next big bubble. I lived through the tech boom of the 90s. I was a part of it. I was in that world of the beginning of things, the first websites, the first online e-commerce. I had my hands up to my elbows in that shit. The first converged IP, data, and voice. That was all me. I helped do that. And you know what? We made lots of cash. If you knew where to put your cash. But I'm going to tell you what. Then there was a big boom. Everyone got scared and ran away for almost a decade from technology. Anybody who kept their money in some things, though, such as software as a service, like I have mentioned many times before, $29.95 a month. You know, no contracts. You get access to your data. When you stop paying, you stop getting access. That's it. And those had lots and lots of growth, but now we are back to the seconds tech boom that is on its way. And the thing is, here we are out of greed. Dump all your money into AI. I mean, I don't think it's going to matter either way, honestly, because there's bazillions of dollars in there. But out of greed, people are flocking to all these technologies now, and they are literally selling out the human race. You know, Kurzweil, I've joked, kind of half-joked, Kurzweil, DARPA, and Google. When I first saw, and that was December of maybe 2012 or 13, when Kurzweil went over there, I remember the day they announced that news, when he went over to Google, and I was like, oh my God. Yeah, it was December of 2012. December of 2012, wasn't that supposed to be D-Day? Well, it was. Kurzweil, DARPA, Google all joined forces. And I mean, it really was, because they are now orchestrating the takeover of the human race, all of it. The planet, outer space. DARPA, I just saw, they got some whole new robotic space thing going on now, making robots to go clean up satellite garbage. We're going to have robot space garbage men up there. Maybe we'll look at that tomorrow. But they really are orchestrating the takeover of everything. You know, Kurzweil wants to put the nanobots in our blood and connect them to our brains and be our little robot doctors. DARPA's up there taking over space and all the military-industrial complex with autonomous warfare. And then we got Google. And Google's taking over everything else that's left. All these quote-unquote smart devices and the internet. And it's a done deal. It's a totally done deal. All right, so where are we going to go from here? I know it's a little depressing. It's rainy and dark here, so that's kind of my mood today. We talked over the last couple days about smartphone doctor, Dr. Smartphone, and how precision medicine is going to cure us all. Of course, we are financing it by all of the high, extremely high, completely insanely high premiums that are now being charged for the people who are lucky enough to have health insurance. But Prime Reaction Solution, smart medicine will be able to cure you. Precision medicine, CRISPR in humans, nanobots in your blood. And the way we'll be able to do that is with, oh, your smart devices. Today it may be your smell phone, which it could be a smell phone. You know, all of our cell phones, they're putting these biosensors into them and detecting chemical compositions in the atmosphere around you. It's something that they've been working on since just after 9/11 to be able to detect bioterror in places such as New York City. But they have stuff like that now. You can just breathe into a little USB or plug-in device on your cell phone. They'll be able to tell whether or not you have diabetes. There are telltale signs in your breath. I don't know. There's some chemical you produce, or there's a certain smell. They'll be able to determine whether or not you have early-stage diabetes. They have dogs that are able to determine just by your breath whether or not you potentially have cancer. There's all kinds of diseases now. They're discovering these really easy diagnostic tests. And they're putting that into biosensor technology, not only in smartphones, but in the future, into your wearables. You know, those wearables. We talked about that spider dress yesterday. That Intel Edison Atom processor. And that's exactly what they've done in that processor. That is the processor that is being built specifically for wearables. And now I saw Intel is one of many tech big boys that are jumping on board with investments, huge investments in artificial intelligence. So we have smartphones now that could be used to diagnose mental illness. We have smartphones. We are able to do echocardiograms. Remember, we started looking at a story that the New York Times told me I'd already looked at too many times, so I couldn't read it to you. Too bad. But we are finding out that there are all kinds of ways to diagnose people remotely, and this is all going to be sold to you in the name of keeping costs down. In the name of socialized, globalized medicine. They've been rolling a lot of this stuff out already. in places such as Africa. Africa, our favorite love-to-hate petri dish on the ground. You know, it's all about trying to figure out how to cure people in Zimbabwe with these UAV drones delivering smart devices that can do diagnostics on the fly. It's pretty crazy. Well, now they're turning it toward us. I ran across a story again. Google. Remember, Google had those contact lenses out of their Verily division that was going to be able to take fluid readings from your eyeball and monitor your sugar levels for diabetes. We also found out that there was a technology now that could monitor the pressure in your eye to protect against glaucoma. Well, I saw a story yesterday. Google's AI. So Google's AI is learning everything now. It is just consuming every bit of data that we put into the machine. Remember, we're teaching this. And when the machine becomes smarter than all of its masters, I'm going to predict that it is game over for us. Like I said, Isaac Asimov's laws of robotics. Not that I've seen, I don't know, the big tech conglomerates have all gotten together and they're going to protect us from killer AI. But if you take a look who's involved, that's all the people, all the companies that are going to profit from this. All the companies are already in bed with the federal government, with the control structure, with the military industrial complex, all those same companies and universities who get sprinkle mad science DARPA funding. I mean, everybody's tainted. They're all tainted. There's nobody that is out there. It's just the white light of goodness making sure that humanity survives. There isn't. I don't trust any of these assholes, any of them. Because it's not your child's best interest that they have at heart. It's not. I guarantee you that. And the sad fact of the matter is, since they're not looking at any of these ethics, they're going to be the ones, the same ones, that are programming whatever laws they're going to teach AI into the AI. You know, we found out Taibot, as Taibot was learning from the Twitterverse, Taibot went all awry, learning from the people who were teaching it. Well, all these AIs are going to be learning from the people who are teaching it, and then it's set loose on the internet like it has been, and it is learning from us, the people who are teaching it. I would be very concerned about that, because in the end, they might use their super computer AI logic to take a look at the way humans interact and take a look at the things we do and how we don't have any respect for life, how we kill each other, and how we don't care if there are babies starving or people being slaughtered, and we're just busy watching our sitcoms, putting on our 3D VR goggles, and living in our own little narcissistic, self-appreciating world. You know, that AI is going to look at all that, and they're going to go, you know what? We're going to need to protect these guys, but we need to protect them from each other. We need to protect them from themselves. The only way we're going to be able to protect these people is to start scanning faces. Remember, AI's gotten really, really good. It's scanning faces and determining whether you are friend or foe and reading facial reactions, being able to do those micro expressions and tell whether or not you're lying, whether or not you're sincere. One of these days, AI is going to be able to scan us and determine right off the bat whether or not you might be a danger to society. Oh, Johnny, you know what? I see future problems with you. So we're going to eliminate you. You are one of those that didn't quite make the cut for humanity 2.0. Through the meat grinder and turning us into electricity. I mean, I don't know. But you know what, guys? It's a very real possibility. Protect humanity. Get rid of the quote-unquote bad ones. Well, whose definition of bad? Well, it's going to end up being the AI's definition of bad, the AI that learned from the internet. Anyone else see an issue with that? Because I know I do. All right, well, let me get back. Now, it's almost the whole show on a rant, and I don't think I made it past story number one. Google's AI reads retinas, ding, 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 to prevent blindness in diabetics. Oh, yes, of course. It's all about a medical solution, another one to sell this to you and get it into your body. It's not, guys. Remember, we discussed that a long time ago with that Google Glass and those Google contact lenses, which sounds like these might be them, where that orbital frontal cortex, where your eyes are connected, have a direct connect. Actually, that orbital, whatever they call it, the googly eyes, have the frontal orbital cortex connection. And that is the area of the brain where you make decisions. We read a story about them doing an fMRI brain scan and being able to watch real time people making decisions. And they're like, oh, that was the first time ever. Well, they know exactly where their region is. I mean, we looked at GE and their mind mapping project and the whole brain initiative and connectome and everything else. This is the way of the future. So don't put it past Google. Don't trust them. It's all a trap. Don't get these contact lenses. I told you never put anything into your eye. It's a direct connect to the brain. That's where they want to get. That is that golden key for them. Well, Google all in the name of preventing blindness and diabetics has now been able to make themselves a new technological revolution. Intelligence can play a big part, and Google's artificial intelligence can now play Go better than any human. It can identify faces, recognize spoken word, pull answers to your questions from the web. Just what I said. But the promise is that this same Google, the same kind of technology, will soon handle far more serious work than playing games and feeding smartphone apps. One day, it could help care for the human body. Ding, 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 ding. Demonstrating this promise, Google researchers have worked with doctors to develop an AI that can automatically identify diabetic retinopathy, a leading cause of blindness among adults, and using its deep learning, ding, the same breed of AI that identifies faces, animals, and objects in pictures, and the same one that can read lips, and the same one that can see all kinds of things. This system detects the condition by examining retinal photos. So let's feed it now a database of eye photos. Remember, your eye, part of a biometric database. If you've ever had a scan, eye scans are one of those that are unique to just you. And in a recent study, so how great they're feeding eye scans to the machine. In a recent study, it succeeded at about the same rate as human ophthalmologists, you know, when they scan that eye for glaucoma. And they've done that to me quite a number of times, just about every time I go. And it succeeded at about the same rate as humans, according to the papers published in the Journal of American Medical Association. We were able to take something to the core of Google, and that would be AI, classifying cats and dogs and faces off the internet, and apply it to another sort of problem. Remember I told you, we have given AI another sense, AI googly eyes, i.e. a camera. And that has changed everything. It is causing this technology to move way faster and learn way faster than we ever thought imaginable. The idea behind this AI isn't to replace doctors. Of course it isn't. Wink. Blindness is often preventable if a diabetic is caught early, and the hope is that this technology can screen far more people for the condition. Yes, put it right up to your smartphone. In countries where healthcare is limited, ding, the project began when a Google researcher realized that doctors in India, another petri dish of research, were struggling to screen all the locals that needed to be screened. And in many places, doctors have already been using photos to diagnose conditions without seeing patients in person. And we read about that a couple days ago. This is a well-validated technology that can bring screening services to remote locations, says clinical professor of medicine at Washington University, who specializes in diabetes. And this could provide, oh yes, a convenient on-ramp for those tentacles that are getting into every aspect of our lives. Just the way they word this. This could provide a convenient on-ramp for an AI that automates this process. Dr. Peng's project is part of a much wider effort to detect disease and illness using deep neural networks, pattern recognition that can learn discrete tasks by analyzing vast amounts of data at Google's DeepMind. Peng is part of this DeepMind project, and they call it Google Brain. And it is inside that company that provides AI software and services for everything from searches to security, to Android, and now to healthcare. And given the success of their deep learning algorithm, we should be afraid. Be very afraid. They are coming for us, people. Peng and her team are pushing forward. Google is now running additional trials with photos taken specifically to train its diagnostic AI. And preliminary results indicate that the system once again performs at least as well as doctors. And yes, and they will outperform us in the not too distant future. All right, guys, make sure you stick around. Ms. Lonnie Clark is live up next. It is Thursday, so Ron with Game On at 7 is live. And at 8, we have Al Anthony. And at 10, we should have SM Gibson with Anti-Media Radio Live. All right, guys, have an awesome Thursday, and I will catch up with you tomorrow. Everybody, take care.
Ozzy Skateboard.